football on off the ball.
International football is very tactical based. There is a lot of meetings and there's a lot of work on the opposition. It's different, but also it's similar as football. It's solving problems, it's different formations, it's different players, but at the end of the day, it's football.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
All right, I'm delighted to say Jim Gavin is with us for the first time this summer. He's going to be part of our coverage as we go on. Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Chair. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Last time you were here was to talk about the rules and the changing of Gaelic football.
Yeah, with John, yeah. That was a while ago. Yeah.
There's been a bit of water under the bridge since.
Yeah. There have been, yeah.
How do you reflect on all that now?
Yeah, I think it's gone well. I think that's consensus. I think from the committee's perspective, the rules have worked as we conceived them to work, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and that's why we had those trial games, or those, as we call it, sandboxing, because it is, sandboxing is in the term, it's a safe space where you can test and probe and prod and try things out. So that's why we had that trial phase, and I think it's important when there are, and there, this will have to evolve in terms of, the rules will always need to be adjusted. So it's a good template to use. But yeah, so we're satisfied from that perspective. And, when we did all the surveys, over 5,000 responses to them, and when you look at what people wanted to see, high fielding, one-to-one contests, goals, long-range scoring, passing. So it's ticking all those boxes. Is it perfect? It's not. Is any game perfect? No, but it's a lot better than what it was.
On a personal level, since you had the rules changed, a lot of other water under the bridge as well.
Yeah.
When you look back on the experience of the presidential campaign now, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I've no regrets. It is in my DNA to serve. I was taken from, or should I say, left secondary school, doing third level for a few weeks, and then joined the Oglin and Herons Defence Forces. So that kind of, that serving the country, that sense of duty is just in me because of my professional career. So I've no regrets and I was honoured to be asked, and it was a privilege. Very disappointed the way it turned out. And yeah, it's been tough. It's been tough and tough in the family and tough in my friends and people who are close to me, but I got great support. So if somebody asked me, would I do it again? I'd have to pause because of that sense of duty and give them back, but I obviously wouldn't. Haven't gone through what I did, but so I'm disappointed the way it turned out, but yeah. I've always put my hand up to do things as difficult as they might be, and one thing I probably learned from it is that I am a good follower, but I'm probably with a project like that where there's a lot of change, I'm probably better off leading it than leaving it to somebody else, like the football rules. I'm very comfortable in that kind of that space of leading stuff out like that, that can be quite complex and chaotic. So, so I've no regrets. We need people in public service to put their hands up and go for things to make a difference in the country.
Yeah, in a way, I'd say a lot of people will look at your experience and think, no, I'm not going to do that because it was so bruising.
I wouldn't blame them for that being that perspective. Nonetheless, if you have that sense of duty in you, and sense of service to the country, to Ireland.
Was that a shock? How bitter and how intense the whole thing was?
Yeah, I probably had a romantic view of public service and duty.
Yeah.
From my time in the Defence Forces, yeah, it's that sense of honour and, yeah.
Mm. I think with something like the Defence Forces, largely 97% of the people are behind you. When it comes to politics, that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, I'm not a career politician, and I don't want to become one. I didn't want to become one, and maybe that's what one of the things looking back is, maybe I didn't differentiate myself with other candidates. I'm not a politician. I'm not one of them. But, you know, as I said, I've no regrets of putting my name forward.
Do you know when the coverage stopped and the cameras went away in the fallout?
Mm.
What were those few weeks like? Because, you know, the adrenaline rush of, like, what's happening, it must have put you on high alert.
Yeah.
You know, when everyone else, when you know, Catra Conley becomes president and inevitably something else takes over the country in a discussion, what's that like then, to deal with that part? Is it easier or harder to deal with what happened?
Like, it's very emotional. It certainly was, because as a family, we were aware of what I was going to do, put my name forward, and I'm in some ways a private enough person. But that sense of duty was overriding. That took over everything. It was a very emotional time, because I do care about Ireland so much. That's in my DNA. But, you know, you just have to put one foot in front of the next and move on.
Were you able to go about your business? Were, like, people commenting all the time? And
oh yeah, like, I'm in terms of resilience, as I've told the Dublin players often enough in games, that the most important thing you do is the next thing. There is that space between that, whatever chaos you've experienced, be it what I experienced, or in a sporting sense or in life sense, that you do have, you have the power between that stimulus and the next thing you do. You do have the power to make a choice. And, I suppose high resilience will understand that. You'd even see it here in I've seen the northeastern city kids who are surrounded by chaos, but keep making choices to put themselves back in the driving seat.
Mm.
That's what I try to do.
Is it a consolation, or does it deepen the sense of regret that you got over 7% of first preference votes? You got 103,500.
I got 100,000. Yeah, that was remarkable, wasn't it? Very, very, very appreciative of that. Like, that's I got phenomenal support behind the scenes from all different walks of life that I never probably even knew or looking at the election. So that was very comforting. Not that it helped in the campaign, but it was very comforting, the support that I got. Yeah, it was. It was phenomenal. I'll always be grateful to those people who reached out and had my back, I suppose.
Jar asked you there, you know, basically, would you do it again? You'd have to pause and think about it.
Yeah.
But would you be president without the campaign? Would that be the...
No, I'll never do it again. But I've no regrets of what I did and when I was asked to not so much the honour of it, but that sense of service of representing the one's country was just overpowering for me.
Can I ask you a question? You talk about the resilience. We talk and hear a lot of business people talk about sport, and sports people talk about business, and sometimes it feels like it's kind of clammy. Did your resilience come from real life, or did your resilience come from sport that you subsequently applied to real life? Which came first is my question.
I'd say professionally, probably life. What's the best way to describe it? So when I was a cadet, learned to fly aircraft, and something goes wrong at the flight deck, you're told to sit in your hands. You know, the engine goes on fire. The last thing you want is your captain screaming, "The engine's on fire, we're all going to die." Don't think that wouldn't go down too well, would it? So you're told, like, "Hey, Gavin, sit your hands," and, you know, if you jump into something, you're reacting to it and you're getting all flustered and caught up in the moment. You need to react, and they're two different, completely different things. And I won't go into it now, but for another day, but the amygdala hijacking, you're trying to control your thinking as such. So it's irrelevant in the sporting field in Croke Park and Lansdowne Road as it is to the boardroom, as it is to something tough happens here, and you've got choices to make, and they are choices. So that my professional career would have taught me to respond to something rather than react, and understanding that you have the power to make a choice. I think from my profession, first and foremost, like my early days in sport. With Dublin, as a player, it was very chaotic. We were just going from...
The team was. Were you still at that stage, like, kind of not fully aware that you could actually take this lesson from over here and apply it to you as a player?
No, not at a younger age. Like, I joined the squad in I just got my military wings in 92, so back then the National League kicked off in kind of October, November.
Yeah.
So I jumped in straight in to National League, and then we got to a National League final in 93, which would have been my first big game at Dublin. So I was just rolling on from, didn't have, not that I didn't have the capacity, but it was just chaotic at that stage as a young 22-year-old jumping into the squad. It was just great fun. And but over time, I definitely learned those lessons as I got towards the back end of my career when I'd experienced, in 93, won the National League, first time Dublin won it in, I think it was in a long time. And then we were in provincial titles. 93, got to the semi-final. 94, down beat us in the final. 95, you win. And then from 96, and not that I expect to get sympathy in this one, but Dublin go from 96, 97, 98, all the way to 2002, without even winning a provincial title. So they were very chaotic years. And over that time, I began to reflect upon, I suppose, the tactical dimension of the game, but more space. Probably wasn't getting as much game time as I wanted. And a very good friend of mine, Tommy Lyons, brought the guillotine down on my career, and rightly so, in 2002. And the mind was willing, but the body was broke. And that during that phase, I began to reflect upon maybe the pillars of performance, technical pieces, the physical piece, the mindset, the psychology. And they got an opportunity with Declan Darcy. We were given, Tommy gave us the 21 team in 03.
Okay, so straight away.
And that was Dublin's first All-Ireland title. They won, Alan Brogan capped. A great team. And I've been a lucky general in that sense that I've always been dealt a really good hand in terms of quality of players, with Conal Keeney, Brian Cullen, Paul Griffin, like really top Dublin team. So Declan and myself coached the team, and that gave us a chance to experiment on stuff, and Tommy managed the team. It came during kind of a match week, so it was a nice relationship. So yeah, that it began to
evolve over time. You wanted to become a manager at that point?
No, just Tommy asked us, and right. Again, that sense of giving back, that's no more so maybe what Johnny Cooper and Michael Dara and Kevin Mack are doing to 21s, that sense of giving back to Dublin. That's what we did. Then after that, then it was like, Tommy, we're finished here. I left and came back then in the autumn of 07. Dublin County Board came back to me and asked me to look after 21. So that's right. When my kind of managerial career kicked off in 07 for 12 years.
There was always a sense that you, Pat Gilroy, and Desi had kind of come along at the same time to senior under 21s and minor, and that it was a plan and that it was like a succession plan. It seems maybe that's a retrospective, is it? Or did you know that you were getting the senior job eventually?
No, that's just serendipity, just the way it happened.
Okay.
Yeah. The Dublin GA had a really good plan, really good CEO and John Coslow, and they would have printed a strategic plan with Brendan Waters called the Blue Wave.
Yeah. Which was ridiculed at the time.
It was, but like you need to have strategy. And if a county doesn't have a strategic plan for its games, even it's like a business, like news talk off the ball, I'm sure you got a vision for yourself, and you got a strategy, and you know your North Star. Like this is management 101. This is the easy stuff in terms of leadership. So John showed great leadership and to point the boat in the right direction. And it just happened that Pat came along, and Pat obviously had Mickey Whelan on his ticket. Like myself and Pat went for the Dublin job when Paul Caffrey handed it over in 08. I'd 1 year done with the 21s, and I'd zero victories. We went down to play Kildare in 08, and we were beaten by a point, but Glenn Ryan had a really good Kildare team. And that summer, Pat Pillar handed his sword back in. So Pat and myself met the last two for the interview. And thanks be to God he got it. I would have fallen on my face. I always say I left Kevin Heffernan was the chair of the interview panel, and I left my notes there with a nice folder with all diagrams of how I wanted the game to play. I always slag Pat that he took them, but but he didn't. I know he didn't, because he was a phenomenal manager, and he had Mickey Whelan. And
you were never getting that if Heffo from Vincent's.
Yeah, well, I had a good shot because Pat O'Neill was there, and Pat was on the interview panel.
Okay.
Pat was my manager, and Pat Pats as well, and John Costa was there, and Robbie Kelleher. So people I knew very well. But they made the right choice, because I certainly wouldn't have wouldn't have won. I had four more years in the 21s.
Getting ready.
Essentially getting ready.
Yeah.
But making lots of mistakes. Not that I made lots of mistakes as a senior manager as well, but made a heap of them as a 21 manager. And but you can do that in the quietness of a 21 campaign, yeah, where there's not
it's
so much
somewhat
of
off Broadway. Yeah,
yeah, like I said, the first year we were beaten by Kildare. Second year we got to an All Ireland semi final, beaten by a great Cork team, McConnell O'Neill. Third year we beat Donegal in the All Ireland final, but we were the first game we played Loud away, and we were a point down, and we're into injury time, and this looked like this gig is over for me. And we happened to win a breaking ball, and a young, skinny, blondie kid kicked the ball over the bar from the sideline, and his name was Johnny Cooper. And we go into extra time, and we win, and we go on a winning streak where we win the All Ireland. So, like, this is top of a needle stuff. So, just the way that the cards fell for me. But no, Pat did a phenomenal job. And then maybe there was a natural cycle, but still you had to go through the interview process and prove yourself. And the more so, like Desi has been working from doing phenomenal work at underage. I came in at 21s. Desi was at underage and under minor, under 18 back then, and again brought teams on All-Ireland campaign. So yeah, there was a natural cycle there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a grand plan. We put you here, you here, you here.
No, and it shouldn't be. You need to prove yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it always looked like it was engineered, and maybe Dublin Football was just really lucky that it had the three of you at the same time looking after 15 years, 25 years, 20 years of talent.
Yeah, and you know what? You're asking the wrong guy here. Probably need to get John Costle in the seat. It's a really good question. I've never asked him that. Did he have a strategic plan? But he would have not known John. He probably had that.
At least he had a depth chart.
He could see the
the
managers and the coaching and the progression. This might work out here, because Pat could have stayed on, and I could have said, "Listen, I'm finished here."
Yeah.
And I only signed up for 3 years, and I ended up doing seven. So, you know, there are no contracts in GAA, as you know.
No time off for good behaviour.
Well, there's not, and it's kind of a gentleman's agreement, and it's a. You know, if you're doing well, you can kind of stay on. If you're not doing well, it's kind of, well, you need to go now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the way it works.
Can I ask you about the five in a row? Because at the peak of it, or towards the end, it was like, oh, you got to split Dublin in two. Like, this is too easy.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, from your perspective, because you have great recall there, just listening to you, remember, like, you have good memory of things. But are you able to enjoy and reflect on successes? So, like, say, for each passing year of the five in a row, did you enjoy it more, or did you feel more pressure to keep it going, if you get me?
Oh, you enjoy them. Of course you do.
Do you?
You enjoy the spoils of war. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But your job as a manager is to focus, the way I thought, I was asked to do a job. And ultimately, like when I said all those years back in 08, when I was sitting in front of Kevin Heffernan across the table here and saying, what are you going to do to the Dublin football team?
Yeah.
And I said to him that, you know, I see my job is to get those players to be their best. That's ultimately my job as a manager. And if I can do that, I've served Dublin County Board and Dublin GAA and Dublin supporters well. Because if you beat another team there, just happen to be better on the day, what can you do? My job is to get them to be their best. And of course, he looked at me, dipped his glasses and looked across the table and said, what's this fella on about? But that was always my principle, is to get the team to be their best. And if we can do that, the kind of results will look after themselves. And I don't. That's kind of the general principle.
Yeah.
So that's my job, is to roll on to the next campaign. Enjoy it, obviously. But then it's let the players have their fun and go back to the clubs and do all that stuff. And my job is to get back onto the next campaign, because that's the role as a manager.
Yeah, you have to be the first person to stop enjoying it.
No, I wouldn't say. I wouldn't look at it that way. Of course, I enjoyed it. So we had phenomenal times, and weeks afterwards we went away on holidays, and I've friends there for life.
Oh yeah.
But from a business perspective, your job is to get this ship back, bring it back into the harbour, tidy it up, get new shipmates on board, maybe change a couple of them, and then push it back onto the high seas again. That's your job. So
imagine a person that knew you growing up, right? And then they moved away and they hadn't spoken to you in 10 years.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much you'd have to update them, man? It's unbelievable, right? So you'd have the five in a row, and then you're heading up this committee that changes the rules of the game because the game got to such a state.
Yeah.
Now, did you get the sense towards the end of your time with the Dubs, that it was like, this is great now, we're winning loads. It's like, I think this game is going in a bad direction here. Or did it take a couple of years after to realise, okay, something has to change
no,
here?
No,
it's like, crazy what happened.
Yeah, so it's not that it took a bad direction. It's just that there's particular strategies being employed where coaches figured out that in Gaelic sport, we're unique. Maybe if you have field hockey, where there's no offside rule. So if there's no offside rule, then you can bring everybody back and push everybody forward. You can put them where you want. So coaches decided, well, you know what? If the traditional game when we played was man-to-man and we'll mark each other, but coaches decided, well, let's not do that. Which is innovation.
Yeah.
Let's bring... And I would have played... That when I played in 95, I was given a specific role in the Leinster final to mark a guy called Graham Geraghty, a phenomenal footballer, one of the best GAA players ever, to stop him from marauding down the field and hurting Dublin. And that was my job, and something similar in the semi-final against Kieran O'Sullivan from Cork. So I was kind of playing not a plus one, but more of a defensive type role. And my good friend Paul Curran got marauded up on that right wing as I kind of covered up back for Paul. So I'm not saying that was the start of it, but that was a kind of bit of a strategy that Pat O'Neill and Jim Brogan, Bobby Dodd and Fran Ryder introduced to the Dublin team. So when I was coaching the Dublin team, our most enjoyable and exciting games were where we played man-to-man, and that's what we did in 2013 and in 2014 as well. But when it's 2015, teams began to play man-to-man, a blend of man-to-man, which is a man of six forwards, and then a zone defence. So they'd rather bring three back or maybe even six back or even eight back. So now you've got, of the 14 outfield opposition players, you've got 13 in their half of the field plus our six. That's 19. You've nearly got 20 players in condensed. So that's why it became very clunky. And they obviously wanted the opposition wanted us to give the ball away, and then they would tack into the space. So we played a game in 2015 against... It was against Derry, and the score at half-time was maybe 3-2 because we didn't... they had pulled most of their players... Of their 14 outfield players, they pulled 13 back. So they had that kind of hybrid defence of man-to-man plus zone. And we kept kind of four back. So we just played around with the ball and tried to stretch them and give vertical depth and probe and prod. I think the end score was 8-4. Still double scores, but it was a... wouldn't have been a nice game to watch, but from a coaching perspective, you're just in the game and you're not kind of concerned about the aesthetics of it. Obviously, there's a particular way you like to play the game, and you've got a philosophy in football, but in Gaelic football, no more so than a lot of sports, you can see defensively you can set up to counteract that, and that's any given team's right to do that.
Mm. It's so much changed so quickly in the sport, but it's amazing because I thought in the first year the All-Ireland winner would have an asterisk next to them because it's just such a different game now. But the adaptation was not seamless,
but it was
quick. Yeah, the game now. Yeah.
Well, if you took away the 40 meter arc, it would look quite similar to games of yesteryear in some respects. Where there's and that's first Eamon Forsmores, the committee. We were. Moving away from the three up, and he kept it on the table and kept bringing it up. And we need to keep looking at this because we all had our doubts. Would it actually work? Could the association accept that we need to keep three players up on the in the opposition or keep three players back? But if you look at the old structure, like you'd be as a full forward line, you'd be told that this need to stay up, stop coming back up the pitch. So. It does look to my eye, look quite similar to some of the games. But notwithstanding the 40-meter arc, it looks like some of the good games from previous times. Like we look back to tapes going back to the 60s, and aesthetically, there's a lot of games that weren't pretty to watch. And similarly, we're not going to get every single game of the championship isn't going to be a box office. But in general, I think the standard definitely has lifted. Mm.
Why did they change the hooter again, do you think?
Well, I should know because we recommended it. So we were getting a lot of feedback that it wasn't just so much and people were referenced the Kerry Donegal game.
Yeah.
That point they got the right time, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal score. And because the opposition didn't push out on the Kerry, they have, you know, that's their choice. They sat back and they could have pushed out, but they didn't. That was one factor, but also there was other scenarios in Galway. We played the game where the ball was held and it kicked over the end line, and there was a number of examples that were presented to us that we would have seen as a committee to say it's that isn't the way to finish the game, and that was the committee's perspective at the time. I made the case ultimately to the CCCC and to the Central Council, which is a grouping of all the counties, mm-hmm. and it's ultimately their choice. So one of the things we were asked to do in the Football Rules Committee is to make the Gaelic football the most exciting amateur game in the world to play much, as part of a strategy that the association has for its four codes. Well, ultimately it's four codes whenever we get through this process of amalgamation, mm-hmm. which should be done, but it hasn't for a number of reasons. So Camogie, ladies football, men's football and hurling would be the most exciting amateur games in the world to play much. We're looking after the football bit. So in our view, having clarity on the clock where everybody can see it counting down is exciting and brings takes away some ambiguity that was there in the past where teams might have suffered from the timekeeping not being as transparent as maybe we would like for teams to see, not just the match officials.
There's stuff in the paper today from Sean Moran talking about the provincial championships, and he's pointing out that it was 2021 at Congress.
Yeah.
60% of delegates voted in favour to move the provincial championships early in the year. They needed 66%. It's completely disappeared from the discourse at the minute.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
What do I think about that? It's hard to see it going back, I'd say, at this stage. One thing we learned from with the FRC, we did a lot of travelling around the country, meeting provincial councils, and very impressed with the people on those committees. I got a good insight to say that, you know, these are really strong units of the association, very strong, with a lot of power. And if we were going to have to convince them to make 48 rule changes, and as radical as they were...
Yeah. Then you weren't also going to take them on and move.
Well, we had to have them on side. Yeah. So we did a lot of work to provincial councils. And in fairness to them, every one of them were... one or two were, it might have been a little bit cold at the start, but when we began to... And it's that trust piece where, you know, is this group competent? Have they got integrity? And are they loyal to the association? Are they doing the right thing? We had to build that over time. But they all said, you know, be as radical as you want, you know. They gave us the green light, and once we heard that, that's when we began to push forward. Now, that said, they value so much their provincial competitions, and so they're going nowhere. So it's where do we fit them then into the calendar? And I think when we look at the current championship, it's a 16-week championship. I think they've done a really good job, the CCCC, to compress the provincial championships into the first 6 weeks, and then we've got the games really kick off then for 10 weeks. So for Tyrone, for example, yeah, they'll be disappointed that they lost. I'm sure Malachy's delighted that, you know, from the performance perspective, and that's probably the true.
Yeah,
Tyrone, you know, they've lots of, you know, you don't win 4 out of 5 20 titles or whatever they have. They've won a lot in the last couple of years and fall off cliff. It's, you know, it's a bit like Kildare, don't know what's going on there, but they've got plenty of talent. And they've got a really good management team as well. Been very impressed with them. So, but back to, so Tyrone will now have
7 weeks, maybe six guaranteed. But
six guaranteed,
seven,
yeah, yeah, to get themselves ready. So, and then they potentially will have 5 games over 10 weeks. To go back to the provincial competitions, I don't think they're going anywhere because of the strength of the provinces. And could you put them early on in the league of the season? January and February, I think that's what Sean has maybe, didn't see the article, but then maybe that's what he is alluding to. Yeah, that is one solution. And then we'd have a kind of a group stage kind of league type of a championship. So that's their options. But I think they've done a pretty good job, and particularly the format now where, you know, say for Kerry's example, they play Clare in a couple of weeks' time. They've only got 2 games in their province. If that was hurling, probably have a like it. They'd have a round robin because the standard is so high. But
yeah.
Like they're the only Division One team. Cork now in Division One for next year, and the rest are, you know, next up is Clare and still in Division Three. So the standard isn't what it should be like it is in Ulster. So the point I'm making is that Kerry have two games over those first 6 weeks, and then they'll have, if they can go on they are going in a very strong position because they'll be first up along with Connacht. For the qualifier series, and then if they keep winning, they'll have nice breaks along the way, but they'll only play 7 games in the championship. They have 14 games in total if they go all the way to the All-Ireland final. So I'm not saying there's a lot wrong, but like we're never going to get it completely right. And the reality of it is that if you're not a Division One side or top Division Two, you're not going to win the Sam Maguire. That's just statistically, that's the fact of it.
Yeah.
So I think it's been really good. Talshan's worked in really well. That's a great competition, and it's been valued now by the counties, and maybe it's time we began to look at a third competition, a junior. Like we all accept in our counties that we have senior, intermediate and junior, and it's my club Round Towers win intermediate championship, I'll be absolutely over the moon.
Yeah, it's not a radical thing.
Yeah,
it's actually the least radical suggestion that we've had.
Yeah. Like, so if you're a Division 4 team, maybe the exception of, I'd say, Wicklow were unlucky not to get out of Division 4 this year, but probably, you know, it's probably a Division 3 team that'll win the Talshan. So
yeah.
Division 4 teams, maybe should we have a junior competition called something else? Because in the hurling, you've got the Nicky Rackart, you've got the
Laurie Marr,
John McDonough,
Laurie Marr,
the Christy Ring. My God, they've and that's the way to do it. It's a poke competition. And like we don't have, Kilkenny don't partake in the championship. But if we had a junior championship, they might give the footballers in Kilkenny an opportunity to play championship football, which they haven't done in years. Or you might have Warwickshire coming over with a team. So there's lots of ideas there.
Yeah. Jim, we've scratched the surface on a million different things. We didn't get to half the things we were supposed to talk about. But it's great to have you with us. Really looking forward to the rest of the summer now. I think you've whet the appetite suitably for it.
Yeah, delighted to be here. We never talk about the championship, but
we will, definitely. Thanks a million, Jim. That was great.
Thanks, Ger.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Football on Off the Ball.
International football is very tactical based. There is a lot of meetings and there's a lot of work on the opposition. It's different, but also it's similar as football. It's solving problems, it's different formations, it's different players, but at the end of the day, it's football.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.